Intelligent design and DNA. Scholars can't explain it all away. Get ready to be awed by the handiwork of God. Tune into Real Science Radio. Turn up the Real Science Radio. Keeping it real.
Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. Welcome to Real Science Radio. I'm Bob Enyart.
And I'm Fred Williams, creation speaker and software engineer.
You're back from your assignment,
Fred. I completed my assignment.
I didn't think you'd be back till next week. Welcome. And welcome to part four of our list of carbon 14 everywhere it shouldn't be.
Carbon 14 doesn't lie.
No, it doesn't.
In fact, it is so short-lived that any specimen with original radiocarbon,
yeah,
it can't possibly be millions of years old, right, Bob?
Only thousands. And by the way, all physics professors, all chemistry professors, they would all agree with that statement. Carbon 14 is so short-lived that any specimen with original carbon 14 cannot be millions of years old. It can only be thousands of years old.
Yeah, virtually all scientists, like 99.9999, agree with that.
Yeah.
And those who don't, they're probably drooling.
Yeah, right.
So you can't really hold that against them.
No, you can't.
They right. got elected president.
It's just, it's not argued or debated. If there's original carbon 14 in a specimen, it's only thousands of years old. And that's why carbon 14 is the creationist best friend. But here's the part that most scientists don't like. They don't like that carbon 14 is everywhere it shouldn't be. And quickly, here's the list we've presented. It's in a Centrosaurus, a dinosaur fossil, and that's published by the journal eLife Sciences.
Yeah, and it's published in the journal Plus One. It's in a mosasaur bone.
Yep, and the journal Radiocarbon, that's carbon 14,
yep,
radioactive carbon. That journal has reported that you'll find 14C in natural gas, coal, oil, and other petroleum products, all of which are supposed to be millions of years old, but they're obviously not, Fred. They're loaded with carbon 14.
They can't be because they got carbon 14.
Right.
And other careful studies have reported carbon 14 in limestone,
right,
from the Mesozoic layer. So that's way down there.
Yep.
Fossilized wood, coal, marble, deep groundwater, geological graphite, and here's a kicker, in many dinosaur bones.
Yeah. Now we've talked about this, but I'd like to give a little more detail. In 2012 in Singapore, at the American Geophysical Union Conference, 10 dinosaur bones were presented with the results from four labs around the world that they have loads of carbon-14 in them. But then later in 2015, in the CRS Quarterly, this was a paper co-authored by one of the friends of Real Science Radio.
Yeah, Dr. Brian Thomas.
Yeah, he's awesome. He is a PhD paleobiochemist. I love saying that. If you can say that, that proves you know something about science.
Paleobiochemist.
Brian is a paleobiochemist with a PhD from the University of Liverpool.
Yep.
So his paper that he co-authored with Vance Nelson, another friend of Real Science Radio, listed 60 carbon-dated specimens, but he only listed 7 and not 10 dinosaur bones the way the Singapore team had done. So the question is, why didn't Brian list at least the remaining 3 dinosaur fossils, Fred? That's the question I'd like us to answer.
Yeah. Well, you know, there's a crisis with science journals.
Yeah, secular science journals.
Yeah, secular science journals of original data that's no longer available. You know, like, remember the global warming hockey stick?
Oh, yeah. There's a big lawsuit about that.
Yeah.
And that Michael Mann, that scientist, he's at Penn State, but he should be in the state
I
pen.
I knew where that was going, yeah.
But he's at Penn State, yeah. Right? Should be in the state pen because of all the fraud.
Oh, absolutely.
And after 10 years of his own lawsuit claiming slander, he's refused to provide the data for that famous fraudulent hockey stick showing the climate has always been even, and now all of a sudden it's shot up like crazy.
Yeah, so in this crisis among these secular journals, the tests also, they're not repeatable. You know, because the specimens aren't available.
Right. So what paleobiochemist Dr. Brian Thomas did was that he wanted to only report on carbon-dated bones that have accession numbers. Accession, that is like museum acquisition numbers. And whether private or public museums, at least that particular fossil can be identified. It's tracked. And so at least in theory, these tests are repeatable for these dinosaur fossils. So that's why Brian listed 7, not 10.
Yeah, very careful, very good science.
Yeah.
You know, according to published papers, tens of thousands of secular science papers with unavailable data and inaccessible specimens.
Yeah.
So here comes along, you know, young earth creationist Dr. Brian Thomas to show him how it should be done.
Right, exactly. So we just quickly presented the list of specimens that have been carbon dated that indicate they're relatively young. And one last item needs to be added to the list, and that's diamonds, even though supposedly they're billions of years old. They're 1 billion or 2 billion years old diamonds, it's claimed. But as reported by a mainstream secular outlet at Science Direct, diamonds have short-lived carbon-14 in them.
Yeah, and they're the hardest substance on Earth, right?
Yeah, so how do you get contamination into a diamond? And bacteria, they don't eat diamonds.
Yeah, and then, you know, Dr. John Baumgartner.
Yes.
So with the RAPE project.
Young Earth. He's a young Earth geophysicist.
Yep.
And the RAPE project, Age of the Earth.
Yep. So they tested 10 diamonds, and they found carbon-14 in all of them, as we would expect.
Yes. So this cannot be an anomaly, as the secular world claims, because it's not here and there, but it's everywhere it shouldn't be.
Yep. So, Bob, last week you covered Dr. Walt Brown's article on carbon-14. Yeah. And, you know, we were talking before the show. Walt Brown, he's, I think, the most brilliant scientist of our day. I know you think the same thing.
Yeah, the Isaac Newton.
He is. He's the modern-day Isaac Newton. But yet he writes in such a way that is so easy to understand.
Yeah.
He is. I really appreciate how great a writer he is.
Yeah, he's an educator. He was a professor at the Air Force Academy. And he just does this brilliant job. I mean, after all, in the last 30-some years, Fred, he's had one job. One job.
Yeah, yep.
Make this a good book.
Yes.
And the 8th edition is out. You and I on our desk here, I've got the 6th edition. You've got the 6th special edition.
Yeah.
People don't know there were two editions back in 1995-96. But yeah, he has done a fabulous job within the beginning, and it's now out of print. And it costs around $100 online to get used copies. So we've been buying them for about $100 just so they're available. We just sent one to a federal inmate this week, just 3 days ago.
I gave my last copy to my daughter up at CSU, put it on her coffee table because she gets in interesting debates with friends and roommates.
That's awesome. So our store does list Walt's book available for $120.
Yeah.
The 8th edition.
And it's very well worth it.
It really is.
And you can go to rsr.org/C14.
Yes.
And you can read Walt Brown's. You'll find his article is listed there. I highly encourage people to read it because it really is an easy read.
Yeah.
He uses a great analogy that you covered, that, you know, the swimming pool and
the
bathtub.
Yep.
And just helps you understand why the carbon-14, why it's going to give incorrect dates, you know, for things.
Right.
Because of the flood.
And how these specimens can't be millions of years old. So both things.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Absolutely. And the interesting tidbit, by the way, that carbon-14 isn't just formed by the atmosphere.
Yes. Isn't that amazing?
Yeah. It's so cool. So Walt Brown, at the end of his carbon-14 article, made a prediction.
Mm.
And so here's what that prediction is. Specimens with carbon believed to be older than 100,000 years will have plenty of carbon-14.
Yeah. That was published, and you've got the special edition there.
Yeah, we both have the 6th edition.
Here's mine. See how it sounds. sounds like a good book. Actually, it's a lot thicker than it was back in the 90s. So this is hardcover 6th edition. You have a softcover 6th edition, but this is a special edition.
Yeah.
And since this, they were all hardcover.
Yeah. And I know, let's see here, on page 157, He has this prediction. And you know what, Bob? This book was published in 1996. So this prediction wasn't yesterday. So it's been about 15 years.
Yeah. In fact, the book I have is the special edition, 1995, 16 years. And in this book, it happens to be on page 152.
Okay.
So Walt made this prediction, and this prediction has since been confirmed, as we've covered, with carbon 14 everywhere it's not supposed to be.
Yep. So once again, Walt Brown made a prediction in his book, and there's so many of them, and then they proved to be true.
Yes.
And it usually doesn't take that long. For
In fact, there's a Mars prediction Walt made that we'll get to. And Fred, later in the show, let's give our own RSR spin to a carbon 14 prediction.
Okay.
And back to a Mars prediction. We got to try to keep up with Walt Brown. That's not easy to do. But before we continue with carbon dating, we'd like to announce two new Real Science Radio YouTube videos this week. Well, one is brand new, the short one, and the other is now a standalone segment from part of our flood video.
Yeah, and that's super cool. I think a listener requested it.
Yes.
And it's Day 2, the firmament, right?
Yes.
So what is the firmament described in Genesis Day 2?
Yeah, that is such a fun video. And like you said, a listener said, Bob, could you guys please pull out this segment of your flood video because it's such a powerful presentation on the firmament. And is the firmament of Day 2 the Earth's crust? Is that what it is? I think this video, Fred, will blow people's minds if they're not aware of the biblical material.
Yeah, because I kind of fell for the standard version. This is not the standard version of what the firmament is.
Yeah.
But if you watch it, it presents a very compelling case of what it is. And it's the Earth's crust, by the way. So that's a teaser. Yeah, so go out and watch that video.
Yeah, if you'd like to, I think you'll love it. All right, now here's a 40-second video we just put up. And there's only a music soundtrack, so there's no words. Fred, I'd like you to watch it for the first time.
Okay.
We'll see it together, and we'll have to describe it for the audience.
Okay.
A Mars landscape, and Fred, look how desolate it is,
that
right?
Is. So I'm looking at Mars.
Yeah.
Panning
debris strewn all over the place.
Yep.
Surprising shaped rocks, foothills, and a mountain in the background. And then, maybe just coming into view, what's that? What?
Wait a minute.
It looks sort of rectangular, somehow held up on a stick. What?
That looks like that's a sign.
It's an old wooden sign.
It's an old wooden sign that says,
I can't
Walt Brown was here.
Walt Brown. Walt Brown was here. RSR.org/Walt hashtag Mars.
So you see this panning of the Martian landscape.
Right.
And then it pans in on a sign that says, Walt Brown was here.
We have all these
great scientific
discoveries where when they're discovering things that Walt wrote about in his book decades ago, we just plant a sign into the image and said, Walt Brown was here. Pluto, Walt Brown was here. Comet 67P, Walt Brown was here. On
kudos
and on.
To the producer who put that together. That's great.
Yeah, that was actually one of our producers, Larry Wolf.
Okay.
I love bragging about Larry. He got a couple patents to his name on laser technology.
Oh, wow.
As an engineer for IBM.
Okay. That's cool.
So, yeah, he's extraordinary. All right, so WWB, right? All scientists work for Walt Brown. And we love to talk about yet another WWB discovery. NASA finds water on Mars. Now, this is really an old story. In fact, it's become a joke among planetary scientists. Mm-hmm. And Walt mentions this in his book. And in fact, we did a show years ago, a long time ago, titled Water on Mars, France on Drugs. And we quoted out of Walt's book, congratulations, you've discovered water on Mars for the 1,000th time. So that is fun, right?
Oh,
even though it's basically bone dry, the way we would look at a desert, we'd look at it and say, it's dry, but there is water there.
Yeah. But what is significant about this, though, is Walt Brown predicted the presence of salt water on Mars.
Wow.
And guess what? That's been confirmed.
That has been confirmed. So that's quite the prediction. And Walt's theory comes loaded with predictions, not only the ones he's identified and marked in bold, as these predictions have been confirmed.
Yeah, in his book, there'll be predictions scattered here and there, and they're all in bold.
Right, and then he collects them all at the end of the book.
Yep.
And the bold ones are the ones in the list that are actually confirmed already. The others are expected to be confirmed.
Yeah. Yep.
And you and I, Fred, we've benefited because we've made all kinds of predictions, many based on Walt's theory, others just based generally on young Earth creation science. And we have an uncanny track record of predictions being confirmed.
Yep.
Where are those Mythbusters when you need their confirmed?
Well, there you go.
Yeah, you just need that sound effect. So at the end of the show, Fred, let's add our own prediction on carbon 14, and we'll let the audience in on something coming up about Mars.
Okay.
But back to carbon 14, there are two lists on our website for today's show that we are going to only look at the last item in each list.
Yeah. So if you want to read the full list, just go to the website.
Yes. The first is six problems with the contamination explanation, right? Evolutionists, atheists, they got to do something if they're not going to be humble and say, we're going to reconsider this because there's short-lived carbon-14 everywhere it shouldn't be. Maybe dinosaurs lived not that long ago because we even have dinosaur soft tissue everywhere we look.
Yep.
But if they're not going to reconsider, then they come up with a rescue device. And one is contamination, and the other, as we've discussed, is neutron capture. And so we have a list of six problems with the contamination explanation and six problems with the neutron capture explanation. And now you and I will only look at the last, the sixth item in each of the two lists.
Yeah. Okay. So the sixth one for problems with the contamination explanation. So remember the inventor of radiocarbon, Dr. Walter Libby?
Yes.
He's actually born in Colorado. He stated in the journal Science, there is no known natural mechanism by which collagen may be altered to yield a false age.
No known natural mechanism. And we talked about this briefly, Fred, maybe in our first show, that collagen, if you look at it as a molecule, it's sort of like a chain link fence. In the manufacturing process, this is all done by cells in a living organism to build collagen. It's a stunning process. And if you took a chain link fence, and let's say one of the links was a carbon 14 atom, and it decayed into a gas. Mm-hmm. Now it disappears. It's now a nitrogen gas.
Yep.
It's nitrogen 14. Well, then how are you going to get that fence repaired? Let's say there's a new carbon 14 atom floating down out of the sky. It's not going to take the place of that link in a chain or a link in a chain link fence, because to get in there, it has to be manufactured.
Yeah.
It can't
just fall
and take the place of a carbon 14 atom that had decayed. So Libby's point is, if you find carbon 14 in collagen, that is original carbon 14.
It can't be due to contamination. It
right.
Can't be. So as of 2021, there is still no known mechanism to contaminate collagen with modern carbon.
Right. And the evolutionists were really taken to the cleaners by one of their own journals, the journal Nature, in 2017. Fred, so many of them, their heart must have sunk when they opened that edition and found this paper titled Carbon Fixation from Mineral Carbonates. This was so depressing because here's what they hoped. Here's what they imagined. When you're measuring how much carbon 14 is in, say, a dinosaur bone,
mm-hmm.
if it's in collagen, it has to be original. But let's say there's something in a bone, maybe humic acid, maybe the collagen and other biological material is breaking down, and there are some carbon atoms there inside the bone, and they hope that it must be contamination from bacteria if they find carbon-14 in there. They just hope beyond hope,
yeah.
because the bacteria must be transporting the bacteria if it's alive, or if it died just yesterday or 100 years ago or 1,000 years ago. The bacteria, they hope, would be bringing carbon-14, modern carbon, from the atmosphere in with it into the bone. That's what they hope.
Yeah. Well, guess what? This 2017 paper in Nature, again, it's called Carbon Fixation for Mineral Carbonates. It confirms that cyanobacteria in fossils gets virtually all of their carbon from the bone substrate they are feeding on. So wait a minute. So it did not transport the carbon-14 in.
From the atmosphere.
It's chewing on the carbon-14 on the bone, basically.
Yes, exactly.
The carbon-14 is in the bone.
Yes.
That's what this Nature article confirmed.
Yeah, it's basically eating the bone. And if you think about how tiny bacteria is, the paper says, and I forget the exact percentage, but like a 40th of a millimeter or a 100th of an inch or something into the bone, that's as far as you can go down into the bone to hope that the carbon-14 was brought in by bacteria.
Mm-hmm.
These bacteria are tiny. They're boring bacteria. I don't mean in biology class after lunch when you're falling asleep.
Yeah.
I mean boring as in a mine boring a hole into the ground. They drill a hole into the ground. They don't drill it. But basically, chemically, they eat holes through bones, like a whole mining system. And they're not setting up a transportation system where they're shipping in carbon-14 from the atmosphere. They're getting all their carbon atoms from the bone itself. That means if a dinosaur bone is riddled with bacteria, so that, let's say, 5% of the mass of the bone, the interior of the bone,
mm-hmm.
it's all bacteria and biofilm. That's all it is. If that were the case, it wouldn't change the carbon date of the bone at all.
At all, yeah.
Because the bacteria is getting its carbon from the bone,
exactly.
not from the atmosphere. Yep. So that is like a death knell to this rescue device of contamination. Now, we've talked about the other kinds of contamination, like maybe it's from the laboratory equipment or mm-hmm. the processing. And that's where if they have a quarter of a quadrillion carbon atoms in a specimen, a quarter of a quadrillion, they would have, if it's a recent specimen, 250 carbon-14 atoms. 250 out of 250 trillion carbon atoms, only 250 would be carbon-14. And by laboratory contamination, they have it to where they know they're going to add approximately one atom,
a single atom
of carbon-14 to the 250.
Yeah, they could blame on contamination.
Right.
One atom.
Right. So when they're hoping for contamination, they're hoping for something way more than laboratory processes mm-hmm. and equipment.
Yeah. Like that Lawrence Krauss said, it's an anomaly. But the problem is it's everywhere, like we said in the earlier show.
Yes.
There's no way this contamination is happening.
Right.
It just isn't happening.
And so when these scientists, like the famous Mary Schweitzer,
mm-hmm.
the Iron Maiden,
yeah.
and Lindgren and all these guys, when they have mentioned carbon-14 in these ancient fossils, they hope it's microbial contamination. But this Nature paper, which was an isotope study, it demolishes their hope that bacteria is changing the carbon dates of these dinosaur fossils.
For them, it was horrendous.
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 Results. Okay, so now let's go to the six problems with neutron capture explanation.
Yeah, so that's their other one that they try to use.
Their rescue device.
Yeah.
And we've talked about the science behind that, but we're only going to look at the last of the six problems. And basically, this rescue device is, if there is a lot of radioactivity in the neighborhood, then neutrons flying out as an element is decaying, a free neutron might slam into the nucleus of a carbon atom.
Yeah, and turn it into carbon-14.
Yeah, through its process mm-hmm. that's well known. But how common is that? How commonly might that happen? So what we do is we take arguments from Dr. Giem, who we've mentioned,
mm-hmm.
who is an expert on specimens being carbon dated.
And we have a future show with him, right?
Yes, coming up. Mm-hmm. Let's plug that more at the end of today's show. And Dr. Jonathan Sarfati, who is a world-renowned creation scientist, PhD physicist. He's been published in the journal Nature, which is the world's number one secular science journal. Yeah, he plays chess, like blindfolded, multiple people. He was the New Zealand chess champ for some years. Yep. Yeah, he's stunningly brilliant. IQ off the charts. So Dr. Sarfati, physicist, he built upon Dr. Geim's work. And basically, this is the argument. That if you have a specimen that is in any kind of standard environment in the Earth's crust, there's not going to be nearly enough radioactivity to account for all the carbon-14 in diamonds, for example, just in diamonds. So here at Real Science Radio, since we're not scientists, we're talk show hosts, you're an engineer, software engineer. I'm a Bible-thumping pastor. Posting 95 COVID theses.
Yeah, that was
nailing
awesome,
it
by
to
the
our
way.
Front door. Thank you. LifeSite News reported on that this week.
Yeah.
Just so exciting. That was fun. But so we're not scientists. So when scientists say to one another, well, there's relatively speaking, radioactivity is generally scarce in the Earth's crust. So scientists say that to one another. They know what they mean.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't know what they meant. So you sent me searching, and I found a report from the USGS, the United States Geological Survey, and they document, we link to this report, that generally speaking, radioactivity is very scarce in the crust of the Earth in, for example, coal, basalt, shales, granite, fly ash, et cetera, et cetera. So if you look at the amount of neutron capture that could account for carbon-14 in diamonds, Jonathan Sarfati, physicist, does the calculation.
Yeah, he does. Yeah, so he documents that neutron capture could account for less than 1/10,000th of the carbon-14 in diamonds.
Wow, that's such a phenomenal thing, Fred. Less than 1/10,000th of the C14 in diamonds.
Yep.
That would be like somebody saying, oh, I shot a rifle and the bullet hit the moon. And you're like, no, it didn't hit the moon by a factor of 1/10,000th.
Exactly.
And he says, oh, no, it did too. It did too. And you show from the physics, it can't because you have less than 1/10,000th of the range or with a bullet, 100,000th.
So every now and then you get a stray C14. But, you know, guess what? There's still zillions more C14 atoms. So you just really totally inadequate to explain carbon-14. It's not happening.
And to look at those calculations, Dr. Sarfati points out that there's a peer-reviewed paper from the IAEA, the International Atomic Energy Agency, and that paper is titled Natural Production of Radio Nuclides in Geological Formation. And so the hard science is there that you don't have enough radioactivity to explain the carbon-14 in coal or diamond or dinosaur bones. In fact, Dr. Sarfati said, if you had enough uranium in the specimen to account for that much carbon-14, you wouldn't call it coal. You'd call it uranium.
Yeah.
The whole thing would have to be uranium. Yeah.
Unbelievable. Yeah.
Yes.
So, and you know, Bob, we only did the sixth one. We have five others that are great.
Yes.
That they really refute neutron capture. So again, rsr.org/C14.
Yeah. And why don't we end the show with a prediction? Really, it's just a variation of Walt Brown's prediction on C14, but it will be fun. And we'll also do something similar with the Mars rover and our own predictions, and then we need to make an announcement. So, Fred, what's our carbon-14 prediction?
Amber will have significant amounts of short-lived carbon-14.
In amber? You mean the kind of amber that they say is hundreds of millions, like 300 million year old amber, Fred? So we're saying, And by us predicting this, that implies that the literature doesn't mention carbon dating of amber. So we're predicting that when anyone gets around to doing that, or perhaps if we got the funding, perhaps we could do it, that it's going to show that the amber is loaded with carbon 14.
And it shouldn't have any in it. And, you know, and this is even though it's not radioactive and it's not contaminated.
Right. You could sort of look at amber and it's this wonderfully hermetically sealed environment. You know, it's just great.
Yep.
So get out part of a bat's wing or get out a piece of an insect from inside the amber and carbon date that. And that bug or that animal part that's in the chunk of amber, that thing will not be millions of years old. It'll be only thousands of years old.
And yeah, so that's at rsr.org/predictions.
Yes, you could find that right there. And then as far as the Mars rover, okay, so first of all, Fred, they call it, NASA calls it Perseverance. Mm-hmm. And I like that because at least now they have a New Testament name, Perseverance.
Yeah, because they've used Noah a lot, right?
Right. Yeah, they have an Old Testament. I mean, every other thing on Mars got Noah's name on it. NASA's watery Noachian epoch, the Noah epoch, and NASA's land of Noah, the Noachus Terra. Not only NASA, Fred, but like over in England at the University of Edinburgh, back in just 2018, they announced this discovery and they spoke of the Noachian period of Martian history. So they keep mentioning Noah, but why do they mention Noah with Mars since Mars is this pretty much a bone dry desert? Although, yes, there is water in the minerals and the soil and all. But when you look at it, like that video we saw earlier, it looks
dry
like a barren
arid
desert.
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, guess what? Well, they think that there was a catastrophic flood, you know,
on Mars,
global scale.
And there's good reason to think that there was a tremendous amount of water on Mars. Well, it's really undeniable. It's everywhere you look, evidence of a tremendous quantity of water on Mars. But why do they deny? They get so angry when anyone says that there was a global flood on the Earth. And yet, we'll read their quotes from NASA's own website where they're talking about a catastrophic, you mentioned it already, global scale, catastrophic floods that occurred nearly simultaneously, which merged into an ocean, possibly global in extent. And these are all quotes
man.
We link directly to NASA's website. So NASA is saying, look, Mars had a global flood or almost a global flood. Whereas the Earth, where they mock us for saying there was a global flood, I think the Earth has more water than Mars does.
Like, I think, what, 2/3 of the Earth is covered in water?
Yeah, and that water averages 2.5 miles deep.
Yeah, yet there was no global flood on Earth. You know?
And they even said there could not have been.
Yeah, despite almost all the mountain ranges have sea life on them. I wonder if the Mars mountains have fossilized Martians.
Probably not. Probably not. So
that could be one of their predictions. Might as well be. So with the Mars rover, we should make a prediction, right?
I think we should, but why don't we bring in a pro? Since Kevin Lee, who's an expert on the hydroplate theory, he's agreed to do a show on the expected discoveries on Mars from NASA's Perseverance rover based on the insights of the global flood and the hydroplate theory, namely the book of Genesis. That will be such a fascinating program because even though we've sent so many craft to fly by Mars and to land on Mars, the technology has improved so much that there should be amazing discoveries this next year.
Well, that'll be interesting.
Yeah.
Because he's an expert on the hydroplate theory.
Yes.
So this will be really another Walt Brown was here.
Yeah.
You know, we'll have to replay that video.
Totally. That'll be so, Walt Brown was here, exactly. And then also, I'd like to thank everyone in the audience. Our telethon, we've basically reached our goal. We have a final gift coming in from a Christian men's group up in British Columbia.
Oh, wow.
Canada.
That's cool.
And they have said that they expect to be able to give enough to meet the goal. We're at $42,750, the $50,000 goal. The telethon ended on Sunday, February 28th, last week. But so now we're waiting for that last gift, and we think we're there.
Yeah, and I loved listening to last week's show. You know, again, I was on assignment.
Yeah.
And I loved how you listed, you know, a lot of the donors at the end of the show. I thought that was really cool.
Oh, thank you very much. And all the states that have given.
Yeah.
So many states and Australia and Canada. So thank you, everyone. And next week, a special show that will end our Carbon 14 series. We've been mentioning Dr. Paul Giem.
Yeah.
He agreed a while back to come on, and since he's a teaching professor of emergency medicine at Loma Linda University, in fact, Freddie earned a BA in chemistry and then an MD, became a medical doctor, and he spent many years researching carbon-14 dating, making him highly qualified to grade our work. So a while back, Dr. Giem agreed to grade our Real Science Radio Carbon 14 report.
Oh, that'll be fun.
And that's what we're going to hear next week. So I'm looking forward to
that. Yeah. This was a really fun series, Bob.
Yeah.
You know, Bob, we were talking about Mars and the global flood on Mars. So I'm kind of curious, what about the global warming on Mars?
Ooh.
You know, we had a really good speaker at RMCF, youngearth.org. In fact, you can watch his video. He's a meteorologist from the Air Force Academy. You'd think he'd be an expert on
PhD.
Climate.
He is
and in fact,
expert.
He is. He's a director at the Air Force Academy.
Yeah.
Anyways, I wonder what his opinion is of global warming on Mars.
Well, you know, there are only like three SUVs up there. So it can't be SUVs heating up Mars. And the evidence was that when Earth heated up a degree or so, so did Mars. And the science journals, Fred, they freaked out. They gave every reason in the world to reject their own data that Mars had heated up the same time the Earth did slightly.
Yep.
And maybe it's not because of our SUVs. Maybe it's because of the SUN. So I love the series too. And for Fred Williams and Real Science Radio, this is Bob Enyart. May God bless you.
Intelligent design and DNA. Scholars can't explain it all away. Get ready to be awed by the handiwork.